There's so much health advice floating around, online, among friends. But who can you really trust? Trust the experts. Listen to the world's brightest medical minds, our very own Cleveland Clinic experts. We ask them real questions, tough and intimate health questions. And we get real answers, all originally recorded live. This episode is a rerun. It originally aired in 2018. Hi, thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Nada Youssef, and today we have Dr. Howard Smith, rheumatologist in Cleveland Clinic. Today we're taking your questions regarding autoimmune diseases. So if you guys have any questions, please go ahead and leave them in our comment section so we can read them live. Before we get started, please remember this is for informational purposes only and not intended to replace your own physician's advice. So let's go ahead and get started. Thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome.
If you want to go ahead and start by introducing yourself to our viewers.
Sure. My name is Howard Smith. I'm a rheumatologist and I'm the director of the Lupus Center here. My interest is in autoimmune diseases and specifically lupus, systemic lupus erythematosus.
Great. Thank you. Well, let's start with a general question. What is autoimmunity?
Great. So autoimmunity is when the body reacts to itself and causes a disease. Normally, we have to recognize what is ourself and what is not ourself. And bacteria and viruses are not ourself, and we have to get rid of them to protect our own health. But we also have to recognize when things are ourself, like our own skin is ourself. And people who develop autoimmune diseases react and reject their own tissues of their body, healthy tissues, and reject them. So autoimmunity is the body reacting to self, your own components.
Great. And what causes that? Who got that?
Well, we don't know necessarily what causes it, but there are lots of factors that are involved. Autoimmune diseases, in general, tend to affect women more than men. So we think that maybe hormones and estrogens have some role in them. Sometimes environment affects autoimmunity. Women with lupus develop autoimmune diseases when they're out in the sun at times, so sun sensitivity can be part of it. There are some environmental factors. There are some chemicals that can cause autoimmune diseases. Sometimes people get autoimmune diseases after certain infections. So the bottom line is we really don't know, but it's, we like to say, multifactorial. There's also genes involved. Autoimmune diseases tend to run in families. So there are lots of factors. We don't understand it completely.
So hereditary as well.
There's part of it, yes.
Great. Well, let's start with our first question. We have Sharon. She submitted her question. If you already have had an autoimmune disorder, could it cause you to get another one?
Yes. So people who have one autoimmune disease often have a higher chance of developing a secondary autoimmune disease. People, let's say, with lupus can have another autoimmune disease. People who have celiac disease, which is an autoimmune disease, often can have other autoimmune diseases. So there are lots of autoimmune diseases. And I might add that if you take the entire numbers of autoimmune diseases, a lot of people have them. If you consider there are autoimmune diseases of the intestines, like ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, there's psoriasis in the skin, there's lupus, there's rheumatoid. There are lots of autoimmune diseases, and it affects a significant proportion of the population.
Sure, sure.
Most people know someone who's had an autoimmune disease.
Interesting. Okay. And is there any way that you don't know that you have it, or?
Well, if it's serious, it'll rear its head, and you will find out.
All right. Well, on to the next question. I have Joy. I just got diagnosed with lymphedema, and I also have many other illnesses and autoimmune problems. My hair is falling out a lot, and I get very weak. Do you think the hair loss could be autoimmune related?
So there are autoimmune diseases that attack the hair follicles. Lupus is one of them, and people make antibodies and have an immune reaction to the hair follicles and the scalp itself, and hair loss is part of lupus. But there are lots of other reasons for hair loss. You get hair loss with aging. There's male pattern balding, and women get some of that as well. There's loss of hair after pregnancy. A lot of physical or emotional stress can cause hair loss. So there's lots of reasons for hair loss. One of them is autoimmune.
Okay, makes sense. Thank you. And we have Allison. How much do you think nutrition and choosing an anti-inflammatory diet affects autoimmune disease?
Okay, this is a great question because it's a particular interest of mine. There are beginning to be evidence of the role of diet and nutrition on autoimmunity and inflammation in general. I'm very fond of saying you are what you eat.
Yes.
The building blocks of our body are made by what we eat, and I tell my patients garbage in, garbage out. And there appear to be bacteria in our gut that make pro-inflammatory molecules, molecules that promote inflammation, and different sets of bacteria that make anti-inflammatory mediators, anti-inflammatory chemicals. And part of that relates to diet, because what we feed our bacteria determines which bacteria we have. So we're just beginning to understand the role of diet in autoimmune diseases. And it's actually something that we're actively studying at Cleveland Clinic, and in our lupus center, we're beginning to look at that.
Great, and we're very excited to hear more. Let's see, we have Christy Jo. I had rheumatoid arthritis as a child. However, I am in constant pain despite being a healthy, fit adult. Did the arthritis leave me with damage?
It could, sure. So let's just take an unrelated example. If you break your leg, people can have pain in their leg years later, and the fracture of their leg has healed years and years ago.
Sure.
And it's the same thing with rheumatoid arthritis. You get joint damage, and the inflammation may be gone, but the pain may persist.
Okay. And then we have Lori. Is fibromyalgia autoimmune?
No.
No.
So fibromyalgia is a common disease. It probably affects somewhere around 5% of women. So 1 out of 20 women have fibromyalgia. But all the lab tests in fibromyalgia are normal.
Okay.
And there doesn't appear to be an autoimmune basis. Now, some of my lupus patients have coexisting fibromyalgia, so it can be seen with other conditions, but fibromyalgia itself is not autoimmune.
Okay, good to know. Thank you. And we have Jeanette. What does unspecified autoimmune disease mean?
So there are a lot of different types of autoimmune diseases, and some of them we haven't been able to pinpoint or be able to categorize them. So in rheumatology, there are various terms that are used. One of them is undifferentiated connective tissue disease.
Mm-hmm.
That is, we know the patient has a rheumatologic and arthritis type of problem, but we can't pigeonhole it into saying this patient has rheumatoid, lupus, scleroderma. And so because of several reasons. One is it might be early on in the disease, and sometimes I tell my patients it's like I'm examining an animal blindfolded. But I don't know which animal it is, but I know it's got a tail. So it's this and this type of disease. So I can limit it to a certain type of arthritis. But if we can't define that it's specifically rheumatoid, lupus, etc., we call it undifferentiated. And sometimes, a year later, we figure out because they get more symptoms, the patient gets more symptoms, we can figure out.
That aligns with more of a...
specifically which disease it is.
Okay, great. That's great information. Thank you. We have Francine. How is connective tissue disorder different from lupus, and what happens in the long run from having them? Can they be treated or not?
So connective tissue disease is a broad category.
Mm-hmm.
That under that category, you'd find lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, other autoimmune diseases. It's just a basically, as I tell my patients, it's like saying I've got a problem with my car. You're going to someone to fix your car. Well, you got to be more specific.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a broad category. Is it a problem with your tires, with your engine? And the same thing with rheumatoid or lupus. They're more specific. So they all fall under the category of connective tissue disease, but we need to be more specific so that we can diagnose it and then determine what's the appropriate treatment. Because treatment for one autoimmune disease is not the same as for others.
I see. Okay.
There's specific treatments for rheumatoid,
yeah,
different treatments for lupus. So one of my goals is to figure out exactly which one it is and then get the appropriate treatment for that disease.
And going back to the diet question, does the diet vary between those diseases, or what is the optimal diet for autoimmune disease?
That, I have personal bias about that, but to be scientific about it, that hasn't been answered.
Okay.
I think that the typical American diet is not probably the best thing. French fries and hamburgers probably are not the really most healthy thing you can eat. I personally think that more of a plant-based diet is better for the immune system. But we don't have a definitive answer on that. And I can't say scientifically that I know for sure that that's the answer. But I think the scientific literature is showing that staying away from what's typical American diet and going more plant-based is probably better for you. And Mediterranean type diet.
All right, and we have Donna. I have lupus. No one in my family has this. Where did I get it? I'm 65. Have had it for about 2 years now.
So most people who develop lupus don't have a first-degree relative with lupus, and it just occurs out of the blue sporadically. People with lupus do have a higher chance of having a first-degree relative, but it's still low.
Okay, great. Let's see here. And we have Nancy. I have RA. I take, I'm probably saying this wrong, methylfolic acid. I stopped taking Plaquenil.
Yeah.
Now we have very few flare-ups. Do you think that stopping Plaquenil has anything to do with that? Thank you.
Oh, that's an interesting question. So it sounds like the patient was on methotrexate and some other medicines to get the disease under control.
Mm-hmm.
Probably what happened is the other medicines finally kicked in and she improved, and then she stopped the Plaquenil because she didn't need it any longer, but it didn't flare her disease. It's probably a consequence of that she improved because of the addition of the other medicines.
Interesting. Okay. Great. We have James. My daughter has lupus. Is there any successful treatment?
Oh, sure. So most patients with lupus do relatively well.
Mm-hmm.
They have data. Some of them have some day-to-day arthritis and rashes and things like that, but they lead a relatively normal lifestyle. We have new medicines that have come out in the last several years for treatment of lupus, and there are really good treatments of lupus for most patients. It's not what it was in the 1950s. The 5-year survival of lupus was pretty dismal. It was maybe around 50%. And now survival of patients with lupus is well above 95% for 5 years and 10 years. So we have very effective treatments for many patients with lupus.
Excellent. On to Jane. Can you explain why you get flares with RA, rheumatoid arthritis?
Oh, that's the $60,000 question.
Is it?
As to why people flare.
Yeah, why?
Sometimes it's something in the environment, maybe an infection, or maybe physical and emotional stress we know definitely affect the immune system. If you don't get good sleep, that affects the immune system, and sometimes people don't sleep because they're in pain, and then if you have pain, you don't sleep. We got to break that cycle. But overexerting through physical activities, you have to balance it, get the right amount.
Sure.
Emotional stress can cause it. Environmental stress can cause it. So there are lots of things that can flare episodes of rheumatoid or lupus. For lupus patients, we often know that patients go out in the sun, and 6 out of 10 lupus patients are sun sensitive, and just going out in the sun can flare their disease. So there's lots of factors. My job is to help the patient figure out why they have currently flared, and if we can, then avoid that. Occasionally certain medicines can cause flare of disease. Mm-hmm. So my job is the detective and figure out why a patient is flaring and then avoid
that. And everybody's
that.
Different about
everybody's
their flaring.
Different.
Okay, great. Well, Patty's asking, can you stop the progression of RA?
Oh, well, that's a good question. With the newer biologic agents, the etanercepts and infliximab and adalimumab and all the tumor necrosis factor inhibitors, they're not cures. We can't cure rheumatoid arthritis. That is, give someone a medicine and stop the medicine and they don't have the disease anymore. But many people, we can stop the progression of their disease and halt their disease with these agents. There are a lot of new agents now for rheumatoid arthritis in the last 10 years or so, or 15 years.
Wow.
And for many patients, our goal is to get their disease in remission so that they have very few, if any, symptoms. But we don't talk about cure. Unfortunately, often once they stop their medicine, within a week or two or three weeks, the disease comes back. So patients have to stay on their medicines, but while they're on them, they do relatively well.
So none of the autoimmune diseases are curable?
Not that I can think
okay.
of.
Okay. Well, let's go to Jane. What can you do to increase your immune system with, I'm going to butcher this one, it's S-J-O-G-R-E-N-S.
Sjogren's?
Sure. Thank God I didn't say it. Or other diseases.
What can you do to boost your immune system?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To boost it. Well, okay. So exercise is important.
Okay.
It's hard when your joints are bothering you and you have, or you don't feel well all over. But exercise helps the immune system,
mm-hmm.
helps people sleep. Sleep's important for the immune system. So sleep and exercise, a healthy diet. As I said, mm-hmm. this is something that we're looking at in lupus patients, and I think diet is key. You've got to do medicines and seeing your physician and taking care of yourself in general are the way to go. But these other generalized approaches add something, and every little bit is important.
Okay.
So my lupus patients, you know, avoid the sunlight. Very simple,
sure.
or relatively simple for some people.
Sure.
But I think diet and exercise are key.
Yeah, great. And I have a question from Assi.
Let me go back. The other thing is being compliant with your medicines.
Yes.
I can't tell you how many times patients don't refill their medicines or don't take them appropriately. And when you go to your physician, you should have a list of your medicines and how you take them and go over them with your physician and be honest. If you're not taking them, say you're not taking them, because if I think a patient's taking them and it's not working because they're not taking them and I don't know, I might add another medicine, and that's not the way to go. So I have to know if they haven't taken their medicines and they're flaring, okay, well, let's get back on the course of what we should be doing.
So medication, diet, exercise.
Definitely.
And sleep.
Yeah.
Okay, sounds good. And then I have Christine. I have
ankylosing spondylitis.
Yes, and should my children have blood tests to see if they hold the marker?
Well, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. So there is a gene that many patients with ankylosing spondylitis have, but the converse is most people who have the gene don't develop ankylosing spondylitis. So her children may have it,
mm-hmm.
but whether they have it or not is not going to affect whether they develop it or not. It might clue them in as to whether they might get it. They're more predisposed to developing if they have the gene. But in general, we don't order that test as a screening test, because about 1 in 10, 8 to 12% of the population has that gene anyway and don't develop the disease. So it's not a screening test.
Okay.
I'd say
so now?
Tell your children to look out for the symptoms of it. And if they develop it, go see their primary care and then maybe a rheumatologist.
Okay, makes sense. Thank you. We have Vicky. Autoimmune seems so hard to diagnose. If a person is told they have fibromyalgia, but white blood count stays elevated, and this person feels like it's lupus, but can't seem to pinpoint it. So what to do?
So I would say that the majority of the patients that I see with lupus and other autoimmune diseases, it's been going on a while. Some people can tell me on, you know, July 3rd, I developed my lupus, and other people say, oh, over the last year or two, I've developed symptoms. So sometimes the disease itself has an insidious, slow onset. And sometimes, even if someone has developed on a certain day, it takes a while to figure it out. We need all the manifestations, all the signs and symptoms to appear, and then the lab tests. And I would say, on average, it takes months or years for patients to get a correct diagnosis for some of these autoimmune conditions. I mean, sometimes if they're fortunate, they have everything that comes together, we can make the diagnosis. But sometimes I see patients and I'll say, you know, I've got an inkling that you have an autoimmune disease, like I said, with the analogy with the tail
sure.
of an animal. I know there's something going on there, but I can't tell you exactly which one it is. That's because we don't have the right lab tests, but it takes a while to develop. So it's a process.
Okay.
It may take several visits to your specialist in autoimmunity to figure it out.
And depending on the symptoms that you have.
Depending on the symptoms.
And everybody has different symptoms.
Everybody's different.
Okay, this is difficult. Okay.
That's the difficulty of it, to try to figure out a disease that you may have a lack of evidence. You might not have all the lab tests. You may not have all the symptoms. And then to figure it out and put it together. And the other thing is you don't want to over-treat. I don't want to over-treat my patients if they don't have all the symptoms. And
sure.
I don't want to, if it turns out to be something else and I give them treatment for A and it turns out to be B,
sure.
that's not a good thing. So it's a process figuring out.
All right, and then we have Vicky. What's the risk of developing another autoimmune disease for someone with Hashimoto's disease? I was diagnosed as a young teen 50 years ago. Also, my daughter has many hypothyroid symptoms, but blood tests show normal function. Is there a test that would be more in depth?
So, going to the first part of it, mm-hmm. lots of patients have multiple autoimmune diseases, mm-hmm. and as an example, many of my lupus patients have thyroid diseases, and they tend to run in families, as I mentioned. I'm going to leave the part about the thyroid thing to her primary care. There are more tests, there are more blood tests that can be done, more specific blood tests,
okay.
and they can ask them about which ones have been done, which ones have not been done.
Sure. Great. And then I have Jody. I'm a diabetic. I have acute QTC and wondering how they're related to fibro or if my fibro is affecting them.
So, as I mentioned, fibromyalgia is a very common disease. Diabetes mm-hmm. is a common disease. Of course, what we call type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune disease as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, fibromyalgia is seen in people who, as I said, have emotional and physical stresses. So the emotional and physical stress of having another autoimmune disease predisposes people to develop fibromyalgia. And people who have lack of sleep, you don't sleep well, you hurt, you may develop fibromyalgia. So a lot of patients who have autoimmune diseases have secondary fibromyalgia, as opposed to primary where they don't have any other disorder associated.
Sure.
So yeah,
sure.
We see fibromyalgia in autoimmune diseases all the time.
Okay, good to know. And we have Marianne. What type of testing can you get to see if you have an autoimmune testing? Any gene testing?
In general, gene testing isn't done at this point.
Okay.
The way we diagnose autoimmune diseases is the way we diagnose other diseases. We start with a history from the patient. Patient comes in and tells me I've had this, that, and the other thing. They've had, let's say for lupus, rashes, sun sensitivity, arthritis. So history is the key.
Okay.
So when you go to your physician, go with a list of these are the problems. So you don't forget to say, they'll probably ask you certain questions, but put down your list of questions and your list of symptoms. So history is number one.
Mm-hmm.
Physical exam is number two. If I see someone who has a typical butterfly rash, then I'm keyed into that that patient probably has lupus.
Mm-hmm.
And then number three is lab tests. So putting all those together is how we diagnose people having autoimmune diseases. It's not any one of those. Probably the most important is the history.
Sure.
So it's good to go to your physician, having refreshed in your mind
mm-hmm.
what it is and when things started and how it progressed.
Okay, good. And we have Vajra. Can you get an autoimmune disease through second degree burns of the skin, even after skin has healed years ago?
So in general, autoimmune diseases don't develop after trauma.
Mm-hmm.
In general, that's key. So I don't think a burn years ago would probably set it off.
Okay. And then we have Elisa. Is there any new research or treatments for alopecia? Looking for some help.
Yeah. So as I mentioned, so alopecia is hair loss and due to lots of causes.
Mm-hmm.
The cause that I'm familiar with is lupus. Many patients, at least 50% of lupus patients, have some hair loss at some time. And it depends what's causing it. If it's due to an autoimmune condition, then we give medications that tend to work better for skin diseases. One of the classic ones is hydroxychloroquine,
mm-hmm.
Plaquenil, and that tends to work. There are topical agents that we give patients, topical corticosteroids, that we have patients put on their scalp, and that will decrease the inflammation. There are other more advanced medicines. We tailor the medicine depending on how significant the disease is and always balance the risk and benefit of the medicine that we're giving. But there are medications for alopecia. I think the key is to see someone who specializes in that. If it's lupus, maybe a rheumatologist,
sure.
or dermatologists deal with this all the time.
I see. Okay. So they could be seeing both rheumatologists and derm.
My patients tend to see both of us, rheumatology and dermatology.
Okay. Good to know. And I have Kathy. Could someone with fibromyalgia go to a certain doctor?
So fibromyalgia is not really autoimmune, but the types of physicians that deal with fibromyalgia, some rheumatologists see patients with fibromyalgia. At this point, pain management often treats fibromyalgia. Primary care is probably the place to start. Mm-hmm. Primary care physician, as I said, fibromyalgia is very common.
Sure.
Probably 5% of women. So primary care physicians are very familiar with fibromyalgia. And I would start with a primary care doc. And if they feel that they can't handle it or control it, or they've tried certain measures, then they might refer to either a rheumatologist or a pain management specialist.
Okay, and I've read articles about, is fibromyalgia real? Why are people talking about it in that sense? Is it a lot of symptoms? Is there not enough symptoms?
So the problem with fibromyalgia is that almost by definition, all the lab tests are normal. So that makes it a little bit difficult to, all the available lab tests are normal. There are some research tests showing that there are some abnormalities in, let's say, cerebral spinal fluid. So it is a real disease.
Mm-hmm.
Some physicians, unfortunately, don't believe that it's a real disease.
Wow.
But I think the scientific data show that it is a real disease.
Sure.
And it's difficult to diagnose for many physicians because there aren't lab abnormalities. There aren't markers of inflammation. There aren't abnormalities in the blood cells. So it's based really on history and physical and response to treatment. So I think basically the goal for the patient is to see their primary care physician, see if they can get it under control, and then if not, go to a specialist.
Okay. And then we have time for one more question here. I have Dawn. I have lupus and chickenpox as a child. Should I have a shot for shingles as a prevention?
Yeah, so in general, depends on what's going on with their disease and specifically what other medications they're on with their lupus. So I can't answer that specifically because I don't know what medicines she's on. But she should talk to, I assume she's probably seeing a rheumatologist with her lupus,
sure,
and talk about that. But in general, we don't give the live vaccines to people who have problems with their immune system. We say immunocompromised, but people can receive, in the flu season now, all of our lupus patients get influenza vaccines.
Uh-huh.
So the typical vaccines can be given that are dead vaccines. Mm-hmm. The live viruses are usually not given. And it also depends on what medicines the patient's on.
Okay.
So they should talk to their rheumatologist.
So talk to your rheumatologist. Okay.
What vaccines they should be getting.
Great. You know what? I will fit in one more. There's a interesting one here from Eva. Why avoid the sunlight if it helps in production of vitamin D, which is essential to our health, and most of us are deficient of vitamin?
Yep. I jokingly tell my patients, if you live in this zip code,
mm-hmm,
I don't need to get your lab test. You're
sure
vitamin D deficient.
Yeah.
but I do get it. So vitamin D is actually, in some sense, a hormone. And vitamin D is very important to the immune system. We are actually doing a study right now of vitamin D and the immune system in our lupus patients. So vitamin D is important. Unfortunately, I tell my patients two messages. 6 out of 10 lupus patients are sun sensitive. I tell them, don't go out in the sun.
Right.
And then conversely, I tell them, you need a high vitamin D level because it's good,
sure,
for your immune system.
Sure.
So we usually supplement. Avoid the sun. Don't get your vitamin D through sunlight. But get your vitamin D through supplementation. But vitamin D is very important to the immune system.
Great. All right. Well, that's all the time that we have today. But before I let you go, anything you want to tell our viewers?
Well, I think the key is that if you think you have an autoimmune disease and you've been reading about it, the place to start is with your primary care physician. Let them know what's been going on. And they will probably do some preliminary testing and see if they can make the diagnosis and see if they feel comfortable in treating it. And if they decide that you have lupus or some other autoimmune diseases and they're comfortable with it, they'll treat you. And if not, they'll make the appropriate referral. But I think the key is to start with your primary care physician, because I like to tell my patients, they're the quarterback. They run the show. They know about all your other intricacies of other things going on, and they'll make the appropriate referral.
Yeah. And exercise, diet.
Sleep. Exercise and diet, I can't stress too much.
Great. Well, for more health tips and information, make sure you follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Snapchat. One word, at Cleveland Clinic. And thank you so much for watching.
This concludes this Cleveland Clinic Health Essentials podcast. Thank you for listening. Join us again soon.